You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello there. You're listening to Opus Talks, Renewable Fuels. I'm Jordan Godwin, Director of Renewable Fuels Pricing here at Opus. And with me today is Rod Triboulet, who trades RINs, LCFS credits, and plenty more at Mercuria. Rod will be speaking at our upcoming Opus RFS RINs and Biofuels Forum in Chicago in September on a panel called RIN Prices, Data Diving, and Crystal Ball Predictions. So in today's episode, you'll learn what to expect from the biofuels markets in the coming months. And Rod's going to kind of give us an update on everything that's going on lately in the RFS and RINs. But before we get started, just a little background on RFS, RINs, and biofuels. The blending of biofuels in the U.S. falls under the Renewable Fuel Standard, that's the RFS, which is run by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. So under the program, which has been around for nearly 20 years now, refiners and importers of gasoline and diesel are required to blend a certain amount of biofuels set by the EPA every year. That's called the Renewable Volume Obligation, RVOs. So if refiners are unable to blend biofuels and don't have the infrastructure for that, they have to go out and buy RINs, Renewable Identification Number credits, to prove their compliance and that they're following the law and turn those into the EPA. RINs have become a big commodity in the biofuel space, and they're traded heavily in the very active market. Opus has daily price assessments that are regarded as the benchmark in RINs pricing. So that's just kind of a little overview of what we're going to be talking about today. Rod, since this is your first time on the podcast, could you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do over at Mercuria?
Yes, thanks, Jordan, for having me on. Yes, so I'm a trader at Mercuria, based out here in Houston. I've been trading biofuels and agricultural products for a while now. And so Mercuria has been active in biofuel, ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel, and RINs and low-carbon fuel standards and other carbon markets around the world. And we've been providing hedging service for producers, for refiners, making liquidity in this wonderful market of RINs and other markets. So thanks for having me on the show, and I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. RINs basically have been an extremely volatile, you know, commodity, a really fun market to cover for a long time now. Sometimes they can get really, really expensive. Sometimes they can get really cheap. From your point of view, what's the RIN balance looking like at the moment? Well, can you kind of give us an update on where we're at with RIN pricing and kind of where the market's at these days?
Well, yes. I mean, if you look back, over the last two years or so, we came from a super tight RIN balance that was really just we almost kind of ran out of RINs. And so, the role of the market in that situation was to incentivize, more production of biofuels, especially renewable diesel. And so people invested heavily into production facilities in the U.S. And so, with the high RIN price, attracted a lot of imports from other parts of the world to sort of solve this balance sheet. And that balance sheet, has been solved, I think, for last year at least, and this year. So that explained the big drop in RIN price. But I think people have been a little bit overdramatic from one way to another, in a way that we're all going to run out of RINs, and we're going to have way too many RINs. And so that really explained those big move from $1.50 RINs down to 40 cents. I think that was probably a little bit overdone, as there's still a lot of tightness that result from some refiners kind of deferring obligation, and also the future 2025 with so much regulatory change coming to the market that the RIN balance sheet is not as heavy as one might suggest. Obviously, it's not as tight as it has been the last 2 years. It doesn't justify the price of 150, at least today. But I expect a lot of volatility in the RIN market coming for the next 12 to 18 months.
That's probably a pretty safe prediction that there will be more volatility to come, because that's something that we've consistently seeing in these RINs markets for sure. What would you say has been the most surprising thing about RIN prices over the past few months? Has anything kind of caught you off guard or been particularly interesting?
Well, I think, you know, there's been some pretty violent market breaks and snapbacks that was not necessarily driven by, you know, pure S&D in a way that, you know, we're trading 80 cents on D4-D6 for the better part of Q4 and then kind of gapped early this year only to recover. And I think it's just, you know, big moves in those price. And I think that's where, you know, you need to be focused on those markets and hedging it well, because, you know, you can get run over or kind of miss some big move, you know, if not really, really focused. But there's been a lot more volatility, I think, that people would expect this year. And I think there was sort of the people would assume the trend, you know, would continue. But this year has been very choppy, you know, on D4s, on D6, are in the same price today, but also on D3, with a lot of regulatory risk on this one as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've seen, like you mentioned, the D4 and D6, those are the biomass-based diesel RINs and the ethanol-related D6 RINs. They've been pretty much priced at parity for the last few months, it seems like. And you also mentioned the D3 cellulosic biofuel RINs. Those have definitely been kind of all over the place the past couple months. You know, we've seen them fall down pretty fast. And then the past couple weeks, it seems like they've been moving pretty steadily higher. Definitely a lot of volatility. And you mentioned the hedging too. That's a really interesting point. That's really heavy, I feel like, in the RINs markets these days. How has the ICE futures on the Intercontinental Exchange, those futures contracts are based on Opus, they're settled against Opus price assessments. How has the ICE, the introduction of those ICE futures and the adoption of, you know, more people trading those futures, how has that really affected market behaviors and RINs over the past couple of years?
Well, it really enabled some people that couldn't trade RINs to trade RINs and to hedge themselves, right? And so if you look at the RVO imports, it affects you import economics for more gas, your export economics for distillate, your refinery margin calculation, in addition to what the RIN market is really made for, which is, you know, biodiesel, renewable diesel, ethanol. And so there's a lot of people that just, you know, couldn't trade RINs on the physical OTC RINs. And then with ICE listing this contract, I think it enabled a lot of people that was outside of this market to get into that market. Just initially, I think, just for hedging some larger trades, some bigger refinery cracks, and some import arbs on gasoline, and also a little bit of a paper hedging for, let's say, you know, somebody that would finance a big renewable diesel project to kind of, you know, set the price of RINs, and also LCFS that has this on ICE contract. But with that volatility in that market, that's actually, you know, the RIN market is a very, very, very big market, very large. It's just not as heavily traded at other main commodities. But so having that ICE future contract and other contract that get listed today as well really attracted new speculators in that market, people that were outside of the market. And so it has the result of having better liquidity and a bigger depth in the market. And I think that was welcome from everybody. And to have a little bit more price clarity as well. That it's a thing that was kind of a downside of RINs. I know, obviously, you have you guys mark at the end of the day, but for somebody that's outside of that market and not participating on all the OTC exchange of RINs, and kind of from behind, you know, didn't see what happened. Now, since things kind of moving to the exchange, there's a lot more clarity for a lot of people. And so I think that's a very welcomed development for this market.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely seems like it's opened up a lot of, like you said, a lot of opportunities for people that were already in the market and as well as, you know, people that are newcomers.
You know, those markets getting bigger and bigger every year. You know, that's the design of those markets. You know, your RVO is higher every year. And then, you know, renewable diesel, you know, it's been really a big revolution now in the U.S., kind of almost replacing totally the petroleum diesel in California and now, you know, kind of going in other states. And so it's really impacting, you know, your global balance sheet of even just petroleum product. It's becoming a real market on its own, and having a future contract with new speculators and new hedges coming to it is it's really a monster development for this market.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was exactly where I was going next to talk about renewable diesel, which has been probably the biggest storyline in biofuels over the past few years. And worth mentioning that ICE has futures contracts listed against the OPIS renewable diesel assessments as well that they just launched a few months ago. For renewable diesel, what's the landscape looking like at the moment? Because, I mean, for a long time, it was really just a handful of major producers that were making really healthy margins. And then all of a sudden you have a whole lot more people joining the club, I guess. A lot more refiners have switched to also produce renewable diesel. What are margins looking like? What do you see the landscape looking like for the next couple of years for renewable diesel?
Well, I mean, it's the classic boom and bust of commodity cycle. I mean, some people were early to enter that renewable diesel market. As you said, super healthy margin. They did very well for themselves. I mean, they saw it coming, and they did very well. And so, when you have such high margin, obviously you attract new people coming there. And I think the tightness in RINs and sort of the move to reduce carbon a little bit everywhere in the world, alongside with mandate for RD and SAF mandates in other parts of the world, really triggered a wave of those new renewable diesel plants, really by big, large companies that had the know-how how to do it and also had the money to do it. And so it's just a cyclical business, right? And so it looks a little bit overbuilt, overdone today, but most likely those mandates are going to continue to be higher. And so we're going to need all those plants to be running to meet domestic U.S. mandates, but also foreign mandates that are starting to be super aggressive as well. And so obviously the margin as all those plants kind of came online at the same time versus a somewhat fixed RVO that didn't really catch up to the build out. Obviously margin went a little bit slimmer. Negative for some, but we're still seeing, that build-out continue. I would say in the U.S., we're going to see some more volume coming online, but those new big plants, those new big announcements are not there anymore. Actually, we saw kind of a flurry of news about majors kind of canceling like future adoption or future conversion of RD plant and SAF plant. And I think, eventually the mandate's going to go higher and the margin will recover and we're going to see new plants coming online. But that's just the cyclical factor of those commodity markets, which is kind of the same for any markets.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the back and forth, right, between policy and progress, I guess, just trying to make sure that the two are working together. It seems like there's some disconnects a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very hard to make those mandates, in place. And I'm thinking about the people that are making those mandates. I think people criticize them a lot. But imagine you have to kind of say, hey, this is the volume of biodiesel, renewable diesel, and ethanol are going to blend next year. So you don't even know, the gasoline, the diesel demand. You don't know, what other markets going to be pulling, what the U.S. is going to be pulling in. So it's very hard to have those markets that balance. That's also what makes the market really interesting to trade, because they're very rarely just buoying and balanced. So they really are either undersupplied or oversupplied, right? And so it's the market's going to react in a way to balance that out, either by getting very expensive or very cheap. And then when that happens for a long time, usually you have also some government regulator action that would, either increase or decrease the mandate eventually.
That's really well said. And I'm glad you pointed that out about biofuels, that unlike other commodities, more traditional commodities, where maybe it's just simple, supply demand fundamentals. You also have policy, a whole different factor in as well, where they kind of have to manufacture the demand a little bit sometimes. You've mentioned sustainable aviation fuel, commonly referred to as SAF. There's been a lot of projects announced, but obviously there's been a few hiccups and roadblocks along the way. Do you follow that market pretty closely, those developments? Do you think we're any closer to a big breakthrough with SAF in the next couple of years?
It's been definitely disappointing, to see the volume of SAF in the U.S. being, so low. But I think a lot of people are going to make breakthrough here, and we're going to see much larger volume coming soon.
That'll be interesting to see. Seems like they're always saying they need a little bit more, policy support and certainty. So maybe if they get that in the next couple of years, you could start to see it really taking off.
Well, I think we finally seeing some, we're finally seeing that, right? I mean, from the Inflation Reduction Act, that was sort of final just a few months ago on the SAF credit, plus the state incentive, the state mandate. But also don't forget that, you know, RINs are fairly cheap, you know, low carbon fuel standards all on the West Coast of the US are fairly cheap as well today. So for market participants to go and like build plants when they see those credit prices going lower and lower and lower doesn't necessarily, you know, make people super, super excited. But now we get some more support from those policies, as you just said. So maybe we'll see some change.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously a big factor in all of this, you mentioned the tough job the regulators have to do. Under the RFS, the EPA reports to the president. So that's obviously a big topic right now in the U.S. Is the upcoming presidential election. Do you see the election, whether it's Trump or Biden or maybe someone else at the last minute, do you see that having much impact on U.S. biofuels markets lately? Or do you see any big surprises maybe in the coming months and how the election factors into markets and commodity pricing?
It'll have huge impact because you already have a lot of change in regulation in 2025 from the blender tax credit to the Inflation Reduction Act, producer tax credit. We've had 4 years of Trump before, and we've seen what effect he had on RINs. It doesn't mean that it would be the same thing this time come around. Yeah, I mean, it will have definitely a lot of impact, and that will impact volatility of these markets. You know, there's potential tariff on export of ags, but also import of feedstocks, our renewable feedstock, that could have, you know, also just a bigger impact just by those tariffs than the actual, you know, change in RVO, if we have any. There's still a lot of the case, court case about small refinery exemptions that are out there that would have a monster impact on the RIN balance. So there's just a lot of uncertainty coming. That means it's probably going to be a wild ride from today until the election and at least the first few months of 2025 before the market kind of finds its footing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably a safe prediction there too. Because the EPA, I guess, a couple weeks ago made it pretty clear that they're not going to give us much signal on the upcoming renewable volume obligation rulemaking, where they kind of established what the mandates are for 2026 and beyond. So that is probably something that's going to be handled by the next administration, whether it's, you know, a second Biden administration or a second Trump administration, I guess, or someone else entirely. I guess, like you said, a lot of uncertainty, right?
Yeah. At least we have an RVO for next year. We've been operating before, you know, on times that during the current year, we didn't even have the RVO for this year. So I think it's a lot of improvement already that we do have an RVO. We know the number might change. But again, when you throw in potential tariffs and potential, you know, more scrutiny about small refinery exemption, those really, really move your supply and demand one way or another. And that can have monster impact on the RIN price.
Absolutely. You know, kind of taking a big step back, for someone who maybe doesn't follow biofuels super closely and is just listening to this podcast because they like us over here at Opus, what would you recommend they look into or focus on? I guess what's the most interesting topic worth exploring in the market, you know, that you see having a big impact moving forward?
I would say first the EPA website is full of information and data, and that's the beauty of those products and of those markets. Since the government markets, you know, they have a lot of reporting to do, and so you get a lot of data that's publicly available that don't need a subscription. But I would read as much as possible on renewable diesel and SAF, because that's what really having an impact in the world today. And I think everybody that's been taking the plane, you know, saw a lot of commercial, you know, in the plane and in the airport about SAF, despite the fairly low volume that's being used. But that will definitely have a much bigger impact, you know, in the next few years, as, you know, a lot of fossil diesel is getting replaced by renewable diesel today. And I don't see how that would change anytime soon. So just Google renewable diesel. It's called HVO or HDRD in different places in the world. But yeah, have fun reading this. I think that's really what's the most interesting aspect of those markets today.
A lot of really interesting topics, and it's obviously a growing market.
Yes, that's the thing. Not to discount the markets that are already there. You know, obviously, ethanol is the biggest biofuel in the U.S. today. It's growing as the adoption of higher blends is going, but it's not growing at the same pace that it used to. And it's definitely not growing at the same pace as renewable diesel is growing today. I would say, you know, when people ask me what I do in the industry, I always tell them, well, you know, when you go to a gas station and you fill up your car, well, it says, you know, may contain 10% of ethanol. And then you may have, depending on where you live, you know, different pumps that may be yellow, that may have a little bit more ethanol. And so these all are effects of the RFS.
Absolutely. So it definitely touches a lot of people for sure. Rod, what would you say you're most excited about in the coming year in these markets?
I would again say how the renewable diesel market is going to grow, you know, domestically in the U.S., but also worldwide. And I think it's kind of the same answer, but like all this renewable feedstock that you need to have to operate those renewable diesel plants, the world's kind of moving away from using vegetable oil to run those plants into waste, and they use cooking oil and tallow. And those used to be very small, kind of specialized market. A lot of it used to go to chemical plants to make a variety amount of products. And now all of this is going to renewable fuel. And a lot of those feedstock are still available in the world right now that's being just thrown away or burned. And they do have a lot of value. And so people have started to build supply chain about it and, you know, send it to Europe, send it to the U.S. But you also have, you know, domestic market started to pick up in India, in China in particular. And so we're seeing international flow of those renewable feedstock and having a market of their own. That's starting to be a really big market and something that's new, that's very interesting. And I think that makes it excited also that it used to be disregarded product and now has a lot of value.
That is really interesting. And it's interesting the way you talked about the spread of the adoption of these fuels too, because it feels like for the longest time, everything was just going to California where the low carbon fuel standard was providing those incentives. But now there's policy in other places and different mandates. And it's been really interesting to see the growth and development of it. I got to go back to that question, though, asking you what you're most excited about in the upcoming year, because I should have said, other than the Opus RFS RINs and Biofuels Forum in Chicago in September, because I know you're really looking forward to speaking there. You've done a fantastic job in the past and brought a lot of value to people who attend. What would you say has been the best part of attending our event? If you're trying to recommend it to someone, what would you say is the best thing you typically get out of it?
You have a great variety of people there. You know, that's what makes it good. Because sometimes if you just a biofuel producer, for example, you kind of hang out with the same people and you kind of miss the view of the larger refiner or the regulator or the trading house. And so you kind of meet all these people that's being affected by the RVO, by RINs, that you may not necessarily, you know, see or meet or hear their opinion during regular business hours where you regular, you know, day-to-day life. And so you go there and you have drinks with all those people and you can have a very good meeting. And then you do have some important people, you know, on stage that sometimes give a pretty good intel on the, you know, what they're going to do. Right. And so as a participant in those markets, it's important to be there to hear that.
Yeah, I'm really, really glad to hear that. Yeah, the networking has always been great. And like you said, there's people are coming from a wide variety of different companies, but also a wide variety of different roles that they play at those companies. You know, it's not all accountants or traders or whatever it is. It's a good mix of everyone. And also, once again, we'll have the main regulator EPA on hand to speak. It is an election year and the event will happen, you know, I don't know, 6 weeks before the election or so. Do you think EPA will be able to say much? Are you counting on them tipping their hand at what they have in the works or probably won't be able to say much?
You know, anything that they say is valuable, right? And they basically regulate this entire market. I think they're doing a decent job doing it. They're going to get a lot of questions about what they're going to do. And then, unfortunately, maybe, you know, if they want to say something, maybe they just can't, because as you said, it's just going to be a few weeks before the election. And then the political kind of new administration, if there's one, might change, right? I don't think they even know what's 2026 going to look like, right? But it's very good to have them on board. I think they did provide some good insight the last few times. Just by obviously they're not releasing anything that's very juicy, but just having conversation with the general public and after doing the networking sessions to kind of get some temperature on where things are going. And I think for themselves too, you know, I don't want to talk on their behalf, but I think, you know, if I were to be a regulator, I'd like to have the feedback also from other people. I know they talk to all the main industry players, but sometimes there's some really, really big kind of same kind of concern and problem potential about the program. And I think it's good for them to hear it.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing you again. And, you know, hearing what you have to say on stage. So thanks so much for joining our podcast, Rod. I really appreciate all of your insights and really looking forward to seeing you in Chicago in September.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you for listening to Opus Talks. Have a wonderful day.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.